Okay, let's start. De Profundis, on shaping culture. So I'm going to go through these topics. I'm going to talk about De Profundis yesterday, De Profundis today, talk a little bit about the legislative battle, shaping culture from deep within, and then the definite De Profundis transformation. I'd like to start with a challenge. Yes, it's on. A challenge to the audience. I'm going to read these lines, and you have to try and imagine who is the author of these lines. I'll read it out because maybe you can't see it that well, and I don't have much text after this. It's an appreciation about Jesus Christ, and it says, "I see no difficulty at all in believing that such was the charm of his, Jesus' personality, that his mere presence could bring peace to souls in anguish, and that those who touched his garments and his hands forgot their pain, or that others, who had been deaf to every voice but that of pleasure, heard for the first time the voice of love, and found it as musical as Apollo's lute, or that evil passions fled at his approach, or that when he taught on the hillside, the multitude forgot their hunger and thirst and the cares of this world, and that to his friends who listened to him as he sat at meat, the coarse food seemed delicate, and the water had the taste of good wine, and the whole house became full of the odor and sweetness of nard." Anyone can guess? No. This is this personality here, which is Oscar Wilde. Oscar Wilde is a very intriguing man whose life is very difficult to do justice to. A genius, a literary giant, a brilliant speaker, delightful company, the salt of all society's parties. In fact, when the invitations of an important party would say, "with the presence of Mr. Wilde," and that was a big expectation. He was a dandy, an aesthetic, a world authority on art, a fashion leader, father of the decadent movement in England, a married man who betrayed his wife with women and men. He engaged in masculine prostitution. He had a stable extramarital relationship with a man. He was this relationship ruined his life. He was condemned to 3 years of forced labor under the Sodomy Act. He was humiliated in prison. He lost absolutely everything. He repented, as the letter to his lover De Profundis states. He converted to Catholicism and received the last sacraments in his deathbed. So Wilde is rejected by all. Catholics reject him because of his disordered behavior. The LGBT group refuses to have him as a hero because he converted. Right? He says, "I filled my life to the very brim with pleasure, as one might fill a cup to the very brim with wine. Now I am approaching life from a completely different standpoint." That's he wrote in prison. He says, he accepts his condition of a common prisoner, and he teaches himself not to be ashamed of it. And he says, "Of course, there are many things of which I was convicted that I had not done, but then there are many things of which I was convicted that I had done, and a still greater number of things in my life which I was never indicted at all." And then he says, "Of course, the sinner must repent, but why? Simply because otherwise he would be unable to realize what he had done. The moment of repentance is a moment of initiation. More than that, it is the means by which one alters one's past. It is difficult for most people to grasp the idea, this idea. I dare say one has to go to prison to understand it. If so, it may be worthwhile going to prison." So these are excerpts of Wilde's De Profundis, a deep cry from within, which is also the psalm, De Profundis, that we read this Thursday, this week. De Profundis clamavi a te Domine. From the depth I call to you, O Lord. So this is De Profundis yesterday. De Profundis today. No one, I think, in this room would want to be in Wilde's shoes. But I think there is one thing that all of us share in common with Wilde. his cry from deep within during his prison as he contemplated his situation is our cry also from deep within when we contemplate our society, when we contemplate the customs that we see that are spreading very quickly, and when we see where we're heading to. We also cry deep from within, de profundis, clamavi a te Domine. And what do we contemplate? What is happening? I think some flashes will suffice. We can't see very well, but anyway. England, 2011. What you see here to the right is a picture of the Tavistock Clinic in London. It offers children with GID, that is, gender identity disorders, that is, children that are uncomfortable with their bodies, children without any malformation, without any genetic, biological, or endocrinological pathology, children simply uncomfortable with their bodies, this clinic offers them the possibility to freeze their puberty until they are able to choose sexual orientation. Dr. Carlo Scirotto mentioned about the second phase, and that's what they're doing. They're freezing their puberty so that they can choose their sex when they're more mature. England. To the right, you can see here, you can't see here, but there's a picture of a storm. Canada, 2011. Parents decided to name their baby Storm, a genderless name, permitting it, the baby, to develop neutrally and decide for itself in an unbiased form its identity in the future, if he wanted to be John or Mary later on. Malta, April 215. This is the gay pride zebra crossing. Yeah. Gender identity bill approved unanimously in parliament. So the right simply to change sex based on request without need of medical or psychological appraisal is now available to all. Genderless fashion. This is a picture of models who are, you can't see if it's a man or if it's a woman. And they're spreading. It's a new way of doing publicity. This one is also, this is a model, a man who looks like a woman. And he appears in Fashion Week. Genderless. Last example I wanted to show is USA, Somerville, 2014. The board of Somerville, this county in the U.S., voted unanimously to amend Somerville's human rights ordinance to include gender identity as a protected class. And it's stated this way. This got a lot of people thinking about what we can do to make Somerville safer and more welcoming to transgender people. One easy thing to do is to change single stall bathrooms into gender neutral bathrooms. Transgender people often feel unsafe using multi-stall restrooms where they may be misgendered and encounter verbal or physical abuse. Having a single-stall, gender-neutral bathroom means that they can use the bathroom safely and no one will question their rights to use that bathroom. So this is here. This is the genderless bathroom. Right? And who led the way was Diesel. Diesel Cafe in Genderville installed these multi-stall bathrooms. Interview with the LGBT liaison. How long have the bathrooms at Diesel been gender neutral? Answer. Since we opened, May 29, 1999. Why does Diesel have gender neutral bathrooms? In order to provide an inclusive community and to ensure that both our customers and staff feel comfortable with the facilities provided. What do you consider some of the benefits of having gender-neutral bathrooms? Accessibility, increased level of comfort for our customers and staff, assisting in continuing to foster the most inclusive community we can. It is also a benefit to our local community in Davis Square and Somerville. So these are things that are happening. This is the culture that is coming forth with strength. Let's go back to Wilde, and let's bring Wilde to the future today. His story today would be unthinkable. The Sodomy Act was abolished in 1967. Condemning today a homosexual to prison would be considered an unpardonable discrimination. However, one has to admit that in the end, it was the British penal system that saved Wilde in all levels. I'm not saying that the British law system of the 1900s was perfect, but what I would like to point out is the importance of laws. If laws are based on sound anthropology, they help the human community flourish. Laws are like those poles that mark the path in mountains, paths which at some times are not so easy to identify because of snow. The poles signal the correct track. One trespasses at one's own peril, but at least one can see the path, where the path is, and return. So laws are important, and the battle for improving one's own country's legislation is a very noble cause, and it's worth engaging in such a cause. Question. Can this general trend of, let's call it, life unfriendly and family unfriendly laws that we're seeing, can it be reversed? Is this already a lost battle? The outlook seems pretty bad. The odds of winning, very low. However, things can happen. And I would like to show three examples of this movement of improving laws in one's own country. I will start with a very small country, much smaller than Malta, 62 square miles, population 36,000, the second richest country in the world, Liechtenstein. Ruled by a Catholic monarch, hereditary Prince Alois, who is empowered to veto any law passed in Parliament. There in Liechtenstein, abortion is illegal. In 2011, there was a referendum to legalize abortion. Prince Alois, he threatened to veto the referendum if it passed. The fact that he expressed this desire of vetoing influenced the polls. 52.2% of the voters rejected the referendum against 48.5%. Of course, this triggered a revolt in the losing party, in these 48%, and they were against this unlimited and undemocratic power of the prince. So in July 2012, there was another referendum to curtail the political power of the princely family. No to his veto power. That was the motto of the campaign. What did the prince do? He threatened to abdicate and leave the country should his power be cut. This is what the leader of the campaign said. With these threats to leave, he, Prince Alois, can influence many people. It is surprising how deep these fears run. It's like daddy threatening to abandon a misbehaving child. Why should he give up his enormous privileges? He can direct policies that benefit the princely family and its interests. He pays no taxes. He saves millions of francs a year in wealth taxes. But Prince Alois, he was very serious about abdicating. And he told the Parliament on March the 1st that if the population wants to change the Constitution, effectively removing his power, a power that his family had exercised for over 200 years and which gave the principality its identity, he would not be able to undertake his political responsibility and he would completely withdraw from political life. What happened was that legislators who served on a part-time basis there in Liechtenstein, they rose in the prince's defense and voted 18-7 against the citizens' initiatives to limit his power. Today, 76% of the population in Liechtenstein, they support the prince's power to veto the outcome of future referendums. This was very important because 3 months later, in September 2002, another referendum on decriminalization of abortion was undertaken. And Prince Alois, again, announced that he would veto any relaxation of the ban on abortion. An example. So Prince Alois, as a practicing Catholic, does not believe that he can separate his faith from his public duties over a matter of such fundamental importance. He is exercising his right of veto, not because of a personal whim, but to uphold natural justice. An example of how things can move positively. Second example is Portugal. Now, since a referendum of 2007, abortion is legal in Portugal and permitted until the 10th week of pregnancy, if desired by the mother. It's permitted until the 16th week in case of rape, and until the 24th week in case of malformation. So in Portugal, there's also this instrument called the ILC, which translated means Legislative Initiative of Citizens, through which citizens can propose laws to be voted in Parliament. Now, this is interesting. In October the 5th, 2014, exactly 1 year ago, a very strong pro-life group in Portugal started to collect signatures in favor of a law to improve the abortion situation in Portugal. Support maternity and paternity was the slogan. And in 4 months, they managed to get 48,115 signatures. 35,000 is enough for the citizens to propose a law in Parliament. And the law was approved. The law proposes maternity as a right, more public information on the support to maternity. If a woman wants to abort, she goes to one of these hospitals, public hospitals, and they will receive information of how the state will support the mother if she chooses to carry on with her gestation. It provides also ongoing psychological support for the mothers, and they help the right to be born. This law was approved not without cries and boos of disapproval in Parliament, but it was approved. It is a very incremental step, I know, but it is a step towards a culture of life. And it shows, however, a growing discomfort with the current law. The third example I wanted to bring is of Poland. Poland is a very interesting example in the abortion issue because it's one of the few countries in the world to outlaw abortion after decades of complete legalization. During the communist rule, you could abort no problem. From 1955-56 onwards, abortion was legalized in cases where the woman was experiencing difficult living conditions. Of course, this was interpreted differently, in a more restricted way and in a larger way. At the beginning, it was very restrictive. But in the 60s and 70s, anything would go into living in a difficult condition. Abortion was practically allowed on request. It was so that, not uncommonly, women would travel from countries with more restrictive abortion laws to Poland, and there everything was accessible and affordable. After the fall of communism, a big debate exploded, and this debate still continues. There has been improvement. Today, abortion is permitted in 3 cases. This is how it states: when woman's life or health is endangered by the continuation of pregnancy, when the pregnancy is a result of a criminal act, and when the fetus is seriously malformed. Today, this is the current situation. So, lots of room for improvement. Now, there's a very large group of pro-life organizations in Poland. In 2011, these NGOs, they collected 500,000 signatures for a proposed bill to ban abortion altogether in Poland. It did not pass. But every year, this group comes back with such a backup of the population. So something is happening in Poland. A 2013 poll found that 75% of the Poles think that abortion is always wrong and can never be justified. And this month, actually 10 days ago, October 7th, a conscience clause was approved in the Constitutional Court. Until last week, if a doctor was against abortion, but a woman came up in one of these 3 cases where abortion is permitted, and he didn't want to do the abortion, he would say, "I want to do it," but he was obliged to refer to a doctor who could abort. Now today, from now on, the doctor can both refuse to abort, and he can refuse to indicate another doctor, so he can be silent. I'm not touching this issue. Again, an incremental improvement, yes, but gaining terrain. Why do I bring these 3 cases? One, to show that everything is darkness, to create awareness also that in our days there are people who do not shy from bringing their faith to the public arena, the case of Prince Alois, and also to point out a common thread that is vital to shape a culture of life, which is the importance of voicing out, showing that there are different opinions of mainstream thought. In a time where coming out is fashion, and where people have absolutely no inconvenience to say in public the most absurd things, I think we have to learn an incentive voicing out, which is saying what we think. The Archbishop of Malta repeats frequently, "Today, silence is not an option." And I would like to show the extent to which pointing out is determinant, also in the making of laws. And we will do that by penetrating the psychological mechanism of group conformity. So recent studies have shown that moral judgment can be strongly swayed by seemingly irrelevant factors. One of these contextual factors, which seem irrelevant but are not, is the social consensus on moral decision making. And I will refer to the Ash paradigm. I'd like to show a video that explains this Ash paradigm.
Under the pressure of social forces, as the experiment itself naturally is.
The experiment you'll be taking part in today involves a set of lengths of lines. As you can see here, there are a number of cards, and on each card there are several lines. Your task is a very simple one. You're to look at the line on the left and determine which of the three lines on the right is equal to its length.
All
right, we'll proceed in this order.
Only one of the people in the group is a real subject, a fifth person with a white t-shirt. The others are confederates of the experimenter and have been told to give wrong answers on some of the trials. The experiment begins uneventfully as subjects give their judgments.
Three.
But on the third trial, something happens.
Two.
The subject denies the evidence of his own eyes and yields to group influence.
Yeah.
Ash found subjects went along with the group on 37% of the critical trials. But he found, through interviews, that they went along with the group for different reasons.
One. They left you, therefore, and then one of you. One. This subject.
You couldn't see very well. But the idea is that everyone except one person was instructed to give a wrong answer. So in this case here, we see that this line is B. But all the Confederates would say that it's C. And the person who was being tested, after listening to all the answers that were given, he conformed in 37% of the time. So this is an example of something that is measurable, that is objective. But recent research has shown that this also happens in moral judgment. So we can think of Parliament. I mean, if everyone is in favor of a law, people will conform. So that's the importance of voicing out. Because the experiment also shows that if one of the Confederates dissents and does the correct answer, then the probability of the person who is being tested to give the right answer increases also. So the importance of listening to another voice is vital. I think the mechanism works in the law fabrication process. So, the legislative battle is certainly important, and figuring out how to approve laws that are in accord with sound anthropology is an undertaking that definitely merits support. However, good laws alone are not sufficient. I brought this text here from Laudato Si, Pope Francis. He says, the existence of laws and regulations is insufficient in the long run to curb bad conduct, even when effective means of enforcement are present. If the laws are to bring about significant, long-lasting effects, the majority of the members of society must be adequately motivated to accept them and personally transformed to respond. So the challenge that we are facing is not just the legislative challenge. It's not just about approving good laws. The challenge is to re-Christianize society altogether. And this goes over beyond and more deep than avoiding abortion in Malta, for example. So let's talk about a shaping culture de profundis. A law that is approved today is just the tip of an iceberg. It is the eruption of a worldview that has been incubated, developed, reinforced for a long period. So shaping culture requires going de profundis, generating a mood, an appreciation of reality, a knowledge of what human being that is able to withstand ideology. And here, I think, is a marvelous field that requires creativity. How do we reach these deep levels of society? This is what we actually need to point. So this forum here has this idea to brainstorm initiatives that are fit for the Maltese reality. I'd like to give just two or three examples of initiatives that strive to promote a culture of life. We've heard some already. The Bat Cave is one of them. But this one is an interesting one promoted by MOIGI, Movimento per I Genitori d'Italia. It's a concert that they organize every year. The concert is called Concerto per la Vita Chi Ascolta. And it's for pregnant women. And it's also a concert that explores the benefits of music therapy to the child to be born and the mother who expects. And it's transmitted through Rai Uno with 2 million spectators, that is 11% of audience share. 150 articles in the newspaper appeared because of this, 10 TV spots, 6 references on the radio. It was mentioned in 60 sites, so it has a wide, it's a way of promoting a culture of life. Another event, the Marathon for Mothers with a Difficult Pregnancy. You have thousands and thousands of people running for this cause. Who can be against a mother experiencing difficulty in pregnancy? Right? It's creating this culture of respect to a mother bearing a child. Another example, a friendly, family-friendly business award, also organized by Fileromo, who sponsored this our meeting here. So businesses that are family friendly. This is the award that was given in Assisi. So this example of creative initiatives that influence from different angles society and creates this culture, family friendly, life friendly. All of these initiatives and others are very interesting. They give positive signals from different angles as to. And they are also ways of getting to know new people and bringing them aboard to this cause. However, going de profundis and forming the mood of the next generation requires, I think, paying attention to how this current generation is being formed. So this I will provoke with some questions. Let's reflect a little bit on education. What is happening to Christian schools here in Malta? Is there an identity crisis? Is there space for creating a Catholic school that is really Catholic and committed to transmit its values without compromises? Is there space for another school in Malta that combines academic excellence and solid Christian values? So this, I think, is changing society de profundis. If we reach education, I think we would have to think of initiatives in this sense. I end with a quick comment on the definite de profundis transformation. Pope Benedict commenting on this psalm, called De Profundis, places emphasis on the I of the psalm, the I, the me, the I that sings the psalm, the I, the me of the psalm. It is I that cry from deep within. It is I who asks the Lord to be heard. It is I who hopes in the Lord. So all of the things that we do in every level, in the political level, in the legislative level, in the educational level, in the creative, the different creative initiatives that we bring forth, all of these things to transform society will be ever more effective the more we ourselves are committed to transform ourselves. Everything we do is useless if not preceded, accompanied, and followed by prayer. So taking care of our own spiritual life, that is, Mass, means of formation, recollections, prayers, spiritual direction, rosary, whatever, is the first transformation de profundis. And that's where we will find strength to face difficulties, defeats, and also persevere when things get tough, and also to open ourselves for others, because we have to involve more and more people in this task. I finish with two quotes. One from Pope Francis at the Vigil of Prayer for the Synod a couple of weeks ago. So the sun was going down. I was there in St. Peter's Square. The night's darkness was swallowing daylight, and everyone had a lit candle. And the Pope asked, "What good is it to light a little candle in the darkness? Isn't there a better way to dispel the darkness? Can the darkness even be overcome?" And then he says, provocatively, "At some points in life, such questions have to be asked. When life proves difficult and demanding, we can be tempted to step back, turn away, and withdraw, perhaps even in the name of prudence and realism, and thus flee the responsibility of doing our part as best as we can." I think interesting speech. Every candle counts. Every candle counts, and every little rock, little pebble counts. I finish with St. Jose Maria. He says, "Among those around you, you are a stone fallen into the lake. With your word and your example, you produce a first circle, and it another, and another, and another, wider each time. Now do you understand the greatness of your mission?" I think that's what we have in mind. Every initiative that we do has this rippling effect, and we can do more, and we can do things that are very creative to transform our society. Thank you.